Hello, everyone. I have the joy this morning of being with my friend Arudra. Arudra is living in Assisi, Italy, with his wife Mahia, and he's going to tell us how he ended up there because that's not where he started. He's not one of those who was born into Ananda like some of the people I've spoken to. Arudra and I have met in various places over these years. But mostly we've lived in separate communities, so I'm going to be finding out more about Arudra than I knew. Some of the people I've talked to, I've watched them grow up, but Arudra came as a grown man. And so this is also for me a chance to find out more about how Master found him. So hello to you, Arudra.
Hello, Asha.
Yeah. I would like, if you don't mind, if you could start, like, where were you born? What was your upbringing like? What were your interests as a child? Who were you before you came to the spiritual path?
Well, it's interesting you say I came as a grown man.
Uh-huh.
I remember you saying once that you felt you grew up at Ananda, and in a way I feel the same, even though of course I've been living at Ananda now for 11 years. Uh-huh. So I arrived when I was 19. I was born in Croatia, which is a tiny little country that shares the sea with Italy. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, since I came to the path, I remember thinking many times, thinking like, why was I born in Croatia? Because I actually never felt any, never felt an attunement with the culture in the sense that I felt that's where I belonged.
I see.
And it was interesting because Croatia is a very small country, but it's very proud in a positive sense. Uh-huh. It's accomplished a lot for such a small country, and most Croatians are naturally patriotic, which was something that was always foreign to me. I was always like, as I was growing up, when someone would start being patriotic, I was always like, not really interested. So, but anyway, I grew up in Croatia, and what was my childhood like? It was interesting because since I was a child, I was always in some way interested in a higher reality. Mm. I remember since I was a child, it wasn't always translated into being God, even though that was a part of it as well. But I was always interested, for example, in superheroes. I was interested in anything that was supernatural. So I would always be exploring, books about, different kung fu techniques to stories of wizards, to all of these sort of things. But also Croatia is a very religious country, and also I think somewhat spiritual as well. But being very close to Italy is actually very, as a temperament, is very, very similar to Italy. So, the Christianity and the Catholic Church is very much a part of everyday life. There's usually, when I was actually a child, there was still really no question whether you go to church or not.
I see.
It was just a part of what you do. So, and I did. I remember since I was a child, I always used to go to church, and it was always interesting. I even remember my father reading. I have a brother, and my father would read stories from the Bible to us when we were children, before going to bed. And it's interesting because the vibration of it always felt familiar.
Oh,
when I would go to the context of the church, it would always be something different. But when I remember when I would hear stories and when my father would read to us from the Bible, it would always felt, there was certainly a resonance there.
Interesting.
And I think it was the same also. It's interesting now thinking about it, watching any movies about the life of Christ or about that time period, there was definitely always an attunement. It was always something, it captured my attention, my energy.
So it was Christ that captured your heart. Is that how you felt then?
To a certain extent. Let's say what happened is that since I was a child, I always tried to have an actual relationship with God. Uh-huh. In And I remember often thinking about God and reflecting on who God is, what he is. But I always felt that this direct communion was missing.
I see.
It was always like there was, it almost like I knew you could get in contact with God, but whenever I looked around, it seemed like nobody actually knew how to do it. It was like I didn't see where I could ask people to help me how to learn it. And I actually remember when I took First Communion. It's a part of the, you know, one of the sacraments in the Catholic Church, which is, you know, I mean, I think most people know what a communion is, the wafer. And when you're, I was six years old. And it was a very interesting experience. And only when I came to the path did I really understand what happened inwardly. Because I was there and you do this whole preparation, you know, for a few months and you come up and, you know, you're standing in the line. And I remember I came in front of the priest to take communion and I took it and nothing happened.
Oh my goodness.
And I just remembered I had this moment of like almost saying like, can I have another one? Because this doesn't work. And it was very funny. And then later I reflected that really what I was expecting is to have a divine experience.
Yeah.
I expected to actually have contact with God, which of course didn't happen because it wasn't about the wafer, it was about me, and it was about whether the priest was able to transmit something. So,
very interesting. Was your childhood, with all of these thoughts, was your childhood happy? Were you unhappy or happy? Or
I think actually I was generally very, very happy. Uh-huh. But there was always though a sense of not belonging. Yeah, that was, I remember that there was always, you know, I had a wonderful family. I had really good friends. I, you know, once I started in school and then I studied in high school, I studied arts in an applied arts high school. And also I studied in a music high school. So I did both.
So you were, what kind of applied arts? Are you a painter or what did you do with?
Painter, yes.
So you painted. So you painted even as a young man. You were able to paint and do music rather than. That's a very fortunate situation.
Yes.
But even having the opportunity to express yourself creatively, much more than many young people get, you still didn't feel like it was your home.
No, it. Yeah, you know, what it felt like it was. I had a lot of fun. I have to admit, I had, you know, in both the schools, both art school and the music school, I had a lot of fun. I had really good friends, but it always felt like there was something missing. And that something really came only once I really discovered the spiritual path.
In high school, being a musician and an artist, were you still thinking about God?
Yes. It's interesting, I always had friends that were spiritual and that even though not all of them maybe were interested in God, all of them were interested in something deeper and kind of in creating a different reality. Also realizing that today's social structure and structure, the way the world functions today is just not really working. So it was always alternative. And obviously, you know, being in an art high school and also in a music high school, many of the people who go there are not mainstream people.
Right, precisely.
I was probably one of the most mainstream people who was there, to be honest.
In what respect? What made you more normal, so to speak?
I think what made me more normal, I never felt the need to belong to any kind of subgroup.
I see.
You know, there was a lot, I always remember there was a lot of, you know, there was the, maybe there were the punks, there was the, you know, the, all of these different, you know, the alternative people. I always never felt, I was friends with everyone, but I never felt the need to identify myself with any of those.
So,
or maybe I never felt any of them were mine.
Any of them were right?
Were mine.
Or mine, yeah. I understand. Now, your parents must have been very open-minded to allow you to follow this kind of a path. Were your parents spiritually inclined, or was it the side of them?
Well, that's a very interesting question. parents were, my mother is very open-minded and she's very, very spiritual. My father is much more, he's very sincere, but he's very more religious than spiritual. So for him, this whole, I mean, actually for both of them, when I came to the spiritual path, it was a very difficult, it was a very difficult thing. And it's interesting because in the very beginning, I didn't actually tell them, you know, until I was really firmly planted on the spiritual path, I actually didn't tell them anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I would, they kind of noticed signs, but I never spoke openly. To be honest, the first time I spoke openly to, especially to my father about this, mm-hmm. was the day before I was coming to Assisi.
I see.
So it was like I held it off as long as I could, yeah. And then when I had to, I spoke to him.
And so how did self-realization or yoga? What was your first contact with this other way of being in touch with God? So did it happen in high school? Well, you came when you were 19, so it must have happened while you were still in school. How did it come about?
Well, since I was about maybe 12 or something, I was already exploring meditation a little bit. I never actually had a meditation routine, but I would explore a little bit, you know, what was it? I would try it out. I experimented with telepathy and telekinesis, all of these things that were kind of, let's say, paranormal. Yeah. I was always very interested in those things because it gave me a sign that there was something more. And I knew that something more of what I was looking for was actually contact with God, but I didn't quite know how to get there. So I was just exploring whatever was available. And I remember in high school, actually, one of the fortunate things is when I was in high school, I had in the morning, I would have classes in the applied arts high school, mm-hmm. where there was, you know, painting and all sorts of different classes. And in the afternoon, I would have music classes. Mm-hmm. And usually between those, I would have a window of maybe, you know, depends, it would be between an hour and a half to maybe 2 or 3 hours. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, going all the way back home, because my school, both of the schools were kind of more or less in the center of the city, I would just stay, I would go to the main square and there was a library there, mm-hmm. or actually it was a bookshop. And I used to go into this bookshop and I would just, you know, go straight, you know, do a beeline to the body, mind, spirit section, uh-huh. and I would just see what, you know, what was there, and I would just explore.
I see.
And the day really that everything changed was when I found the autobiography.
So you just pulled it off the shelf?
Yeah, and it was very interesting because I took it off the shelf. Well, first I saw it and I thought, I'm not really interested in yoga, because all my concept of yoga was only physical, it was only hatha yoga. I didn't know that there was anything else to it. Uh-huh. But I was very interested in meditation. And so I would kind of pick up all the other books. But then it kept calling. And so I took it. And I remember as soon as I saw Master's picture, my first thought was, oh, I didn't know women could be yogis. Huh. Yeah. It was interesting. For years, I didn't, I was ashamed to actually tell anyone that that was my first thought. Then I remember reading that Rajashi thought the same when he saw a billboard of Master's Discourse somewhere. So I thought, okay, well, if it happened to Rajesh, I guess it's okay. Uh-huh. So, and it was interesting because that day I opened the autobiography and I skipped all my classes in the afternoon. I just couldn't keep, I just had to keep reading. Just kept reading and reading and reading. And then the day after I came back and I bought it. And that was the beginning of everything, really.
That's amazing. So it was instantaneous. How old were you?
I was 18 at that time, actually.
So this is your last year of high school then?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was always there, but it waited until just before you were free to make a decision.
Exactly.
Yeah. How very fascinating.
Yeah. I felt that was one of the reasons why I found it only then, because I think I could not have waited.
Uh-huh.
I just knew I couldn't have waited. And in this way, it helped me to actually not have to wait.
Yeah, exactly. So you read the book, and obviously you graduated high school. So what did you go to? Did you even bother to go to university or anything like that? Or
I did. I started studying. I did 1 year at the music conservatorium in Zagreb. Uh-huh. So I started studying there for a composition. Uh-huh. But it was interesting because I remember feeling, even as I started, I always had a feeling it's not going to last. I didn't know when I would have to go, but I remember having a very clear inner feeling that even though I'm starting it, I'm not going to finish.
So then how did you discover Ananda? Was it through Swami Kriyananda or through the place in Assisi? What happened next?
So it's actually, it's a funny story. There's two stories connected to this, actually. One was my first, I think, contact with Ananda and with Swami, I think it was not conscious. Uh-huh. But it was when I was about maybe 15, I can't remember exactly, but I was in high school, and because we were studying art, one of the trips we did as a school was to go to Italy. So we did, you know, a whole tour of all the different places to, you know, look at the art and all of these things, which naturally, you know, Italy being the hub of really beautiful art. And I remember during that trip, we also went to Assisi. And I had this really interesting experience. I was sitting with a friend in the bus, and we were just talking about more or less nothing. And literally, as we were driving into Assisi, you know, we were just passing through the kind of round gate, you know, old Roman gate. We were passing through it, and all of a sudden I just stopped, and I said to my friend, you know, this is going to sound really strange, but I know I'm going to live here in the future.
Really?
So and my friend looked at me and said, you're right, it sounds very strange. So, yeah, and I only remember that maybe about 2 or 3 years after I came here already. So it was an interesting, it was kind of like a first, I think my soul knew,
yes.
Even though I had nothing to, you know, mentally I was thinking like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So the way I actually found Ananda, it was interesting because the autobiography I found was not the Ananda version, it was an SRF version.
Right.
And so I went, you know, I went back home, I read it, I felt, you know, this is it, this was my guru. And I tried to find an SRF group in Croatia, uh-huh. And there was none. And I remember I even tried to find an SRF group like somewhere nearby, you know, maybe Slovenia, which is, you know, neighboring, or maybe Austria. I was thinking, like, you know, I was actually quite, I remember being quite upset at God saying, you know, why do you give me this if you're not going to give me a way to follow it? Mm-hmm. And luckily I didn't find any SRF group, so let's say it like that. And that, in the sense that I don't think I would ever be able to survive there. So. I think Ananda is certainly my family. So an interesting thing was that as I was in that period, I was really praying a lot. And I was just asking, I was praying to Divine Mother, I was praying to Master, I was saying, okay, I need a sign. You know, if you want me to do this, you need to help me find a way. If you don't want me to do this, you need to at least help me to understand it. So, and I remember one day I was, this is the way I remember it. It seems strange, but this is the way I remember it. I was talking to my brother on the phone, mm-hmm. And he was trying to find something on the internet and he couldn't find it. Mm-hmm. And it was something about, you know, something about cars. It was something that had nothing to do with any spirituality. And so I was trying to help him find this. So I was researching this. And I found this website, and as I'm scrolling down, there was a link at the bottom of the website. Mm-hmm. And for some reason I saw the link and it was not fully loaded, so you could only see the code. Mm-hmm. So it just seemed like it didn't make any sense because it was just jumbled letters together. And somehow I was like, I don't know why, but I have to see what's behind that link. Mm-hmm. And I clicked on the link and I found myself on Ananda's website.
Yeah. And that was the first you found out about that we were there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's just too absurd.
So it was absurd. It was really absurd because I remember things like, you know, I this website opened and I saw Master's picture. You know, I saw first Ananda and then it said there was a Master's picture. And I said, oh, as master. And so I scrolled down and, you know, I saw there was that it was there, and I kind of realized, okay, you know, I have to see if there's Ananda here. And so I found a meditation group in Zagreb. Huh. And that was the beginning.
That's the beginning. Oh my goodness. You know, it's just so amazing to me how I don't know why we ever worry about anything. I know that we do, but we're so much in God's hands. He's just got the plan laid out. So once you discovered, so then did you just go immediately to visit, or did you start corresponding? How did you get in touch?
So what I did is I called, because there was a number you could call for the meditation group, and I said I want to learn how to meditate. Uh-huh. which was a big deal for me, because I was extremely shy.
I see.
Like, so shy that I was shy to the point that if I wanted to borrow a DVD from my neighbor, uh-huh, and I had to call him on the phone to do it, I would rather not do it than watch the film. That's how shy I was. So it was a big thing, okay, really calling someone. I had no idea who they were, and just, you know, but it was such a strong feeling. I knew I could not ignore it. So I called, and I, you know, I went maybe 2 days after, I went to the group and learned Hong So. Uh-huh. And then I was part of the group for about maybe a year and a half before I came to Assisi for the first time. Uh-huh. And it was interesting. I still remember the first time I met Shivani. Uh-huh. It was, she was coming to Zagreb, and she was, you know, doing a series of classes, and she was giving discipleship. And that was when I took discipleship. And I still remember this moment. I was in the room waiting, and the door opens, and someone walks in, which was Uma. But I didn't know, I only heard that Shivani was coming, didn't know that anyone was coming with her. And Uma walks in, and I look at her, I'm just thinking, this is not Shivani. And then Shivani walks in, and I'm just like, this is Shivani. And it was very funny. I just remember the, you know, the first time I, after the, you know, after the class, after the discipleship initiation, we were talking. And as we were talking, she said, you know, why didn't you come and visit us at Assisi? And I said, like, well, you know, I'll come the first chance I get. And so she turns to talk to someone else, and I turn to a friend. And I said, like, what's in Assisi? I had no idea. I still didn't have an idea that it was a community. It was just, you know, I only knew, you know, there was master and there was this path, but it just totally went over my head up to that point.
Let's skip now to the time. So you finally come to Assisi. Was Swami Kriyananda in residence when you were there, or no?
The first time I was there, yes, Swami was there. I came in July. In July 2009 was the first time I came. And I think he either just came or he was already there.
Do you remember meeting him for the first time? Did he make an impression on you the first time you met him?
He did. It was interesting, because up to that point, Swami, even though I had read the path, somehow Swami was only a name. Uh-huh. It was, let's say like this, I was so in love with Master that it was just like, yeah, Swami Kriyananda is his direct disciple. That's great. But it just didn't figure, you know, it just wasn't part of my aura. And I remember the first time I met him, just, I was basically speechless. I just remember thinking, whoa. And it just really helped me, just really shifted my, it was almost like it shifted in an instant, my relationship with Swami. It was just, I felt a connection, but I also realized how important Swami was even in my relationship with Master. And
why was he important in your relationship with Master?
Because he was a completely open and clear channel for Master. And I remember even the first time I met him, how much being in his presence helped me to feel Master's presence within myself.
That pretty much.
And it was just, and it was interesting, because I remember the first maybe three or four times that I saw Swami, and it was always in a public setting. Every single time, it's almost like I had this kind of very, very vague and very tiny idea of who Swami was. Mm-hmm. And like every single time, my idea was just like, you know, basically exploded into nothingness and being like, okay, there's much more to this than I'm really understanding. So
then you moved. Then you just put everything aside, told your papa, and just and just threw your lot in. And did you ever look back? I mean, once you made the move, did you ever look back?
No. I never did. It was interesting that when I first came, it wasn't an easy period because my parents were very much against it. Uh-huh. You know, which you can imagine. I mean, for them, it was almost like a bit like Swami himself explains it, almost like, you know, throwing a grenade into a leisurely Sunday lunch. That's how that was the effect it had on my parents. They kind of thought he's either been brainwashed. Uh-huh. or he's not sane. Basically, that was there. You know, they thought there was no way that anything else could be the solution to this problem. It was either, that was the only two options in their mind. Yeah. And it was interesting because I think partly it was because as I was growing up, I never really did anything against my parents' will.
I see.
Because there was never a moment that I felt that what they were asking of me is not right. Mm-hmm. And then when the moment came, I knew that I couldn't go back.
Oh my goodness. So did your parents, have your parents reconciled? They've reconciled.
Yeah. I think they've, you know, as all parents, they've seen the effect it had on my life. Uh-huh. And how much it changed me. And they've seen that, you know, even though this seems a strange thing, other things he's doing seem to be normal. You know, it's very interesting. Actually, when Mahi and I got together, that really helped my parents. You know, okay, he's doing at least something that's normal.
Yes, so exactly. It's kind of, I understand. So I'm going to just kind of skip around to a few things now. How has it changed for you since Swami left his body? Is Swami still a living part of your life? And if so, how do you keep him part of your life? How is he part of your life?
I think it would be, I would say that the most complete way is that he's a part of my life in every and all ways. Uh-huh. Because I know that my whole life, came from and through Swami. Mm-hmm. So it's hard, it would be hard to describe what specific parts he's part of, because I owe my whole life to Swami. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Swami. I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for Swami. Mm-hmm. And I think I would definitely not be, also my relationship with Master wouldn't be what it is without Swami. I feel like that everything I know of Master has come to Swami. So, and the way I would say keep that relationship and contact alive, well, there's many ways. Obviously, tuning in to Swami in meditation and talking to him inwardly, but obviously also through his books, through his music, for sure. And for me, music has always been an important part, and for, I think in some ways Swami's music is what molded my spiritual life in many ways. And I would definitely say, obviously, everyone who's known Swami, you can see that everything that happens at Ananda is Swami, just happening through different channels.
How has his music molded your spiritual life?
His music gave me the experience of what it feels like to live the attitude that Swami is living. That Swami is living. I guess that would be okay to say. And to actually have a direct contact with that consciousness, and how that consciousness that he received from Master is expressed in all different ways and all different parts of life. Don't know if that's clear, but that's kind of the feeling I get from it.
No, that's very clear. Swami's own statement, if you want to know who I am, listen to the music. So there you just said that's what it's giving you. Since who he is the spiritual life. Very lovely. Give me just a very brief summary. What are you doing now? What are your responsibilities in the CC? You've mentioned that you're married to Mahia. What do you do? What is your...
There's many, but Mahia and I together guide the Living Discipleship Program in Assisi, which is, it's the, like the Living Discipleship Month, like it happens, which is a membership program, which is a year-long program. Uh-huh. And apart from that, I think it would be easier to say what I'm not involved in than what I am involved in. Because both Mahia and I are part of the what is called in Assisi the community team, which is a team of, like you could say, of younger leadership, of you know the next generation who is stepping into leadership roles and who kind of tries to really communicate with between the different realities of the community and also think about the vision for the you know what are the next steps and how can we develop the community on all different levels, from the practical level to the social level to the spiritual level.
And how would you describe how you see Ananda's future? What would be the ideal for Ananda Assisi going into the future? What would it be? What would it look like? What would it feel like?
Very good question. I think what it would feel like more than what it would look like. I think it's hard to know what it will look like. Also because it's a time of great expansion and change in all of Ananda communities, but also here in Assisi. But what it feels like to me is more and more people coming who really feel called to dedicate their life to Masters and to Swami's mission and really taking responsibility and really attuning themselves very deeply to the seeds that Swami left and expanding and developing those seeds. Because that's what it feels like. There's a very strong, especially spiritual nucleus in Ananda Assisi. And I think what it almost feels like now is the time to really have many more people come and just expand, like in all ways, in all the different directions.
That's lovely. Thank you very much for sharing all of that. What a wonderful story. Divine Mother, just, we're never alone.
Yeah.
We think we're alone. We think we're in charge. And we're just on her little train track. And she's just opening and shutting the doors as she means to.
Exactly. That's wonderful.
Well, God bless you, my friend.
Thank you.
What a joy to speak to you.